Chapter 9. September. Chocolate and Three Kings Day Bread. Ingredients for the chocolate. 2 pounds Soconusco chocolate beans, 2 pounds Maracaibo chocolate beans, 2 pounds Caracas chocolate beans, 4 to 6 pounds sugar to taste. Preparation. The first step is to toast the chocolate beans. It's good to use a metal pan rather than an earthenware griddle, since the pores of the griddle soak up the oil the beans give off. It's very important to pay attention to this sort of detail, since the goodness of the chocolate depends on 3 things, namely, that the chocolate beans used are good and without defect, that you mix several different types of beans to make the chocolate, and finally, the amount of toasting. It's advisable to toast the cocoa beans just until the moment they begin to give off oil. If they are removed from the heat before then, they will make a discolored and disagreeable-looking chocolate, which will be indigestible besides. On the other hand, if they are left on the heat too long, most of the beans will be burned, which will make the chocolate bitter and acrid. Tita extracted just 1/2 teaspoon of this oil to mix with sweet almond oil for an excellent lip ointment. Her lips always chapped every winter, no matter what precautions she took. When she was a child, this caused her considerable discomfort. Whenever she laughed, the fleshy part of her lips would crack open and bleed, producing a sharp pain. In time, she grew resigned to this. Now that she didn't have a lot of reasons to laugh, it no longer concerned her. She could wait patiently for spring for the cracks to disappear. The only reason she was making the pomade was that some guests were coming to the house tonight to share the King's Day bread. It was for vanity that she wanted her lips to look soft and shiny for the party, not because she expected to laugh very much. The suspicion that she was pregnant hardly brought a laugh to her lips. This possibility had not occurred to her as she consummated her love with Pedro. She still hadn't told him. She planned to do so tonight, but she didn't know how. What would Pedro's reaction be, and the solution to this huge problem? She had no idea. She would rather not torment herself, would rather turn her mind toward more trivial matters, like the preparation of a good lip balm. For that, there's nothing like cocoa butter. But before starting to prepare it, she had to have the chocolate ready. When the cocoa beans are done being toasted, as described above, they are cleaned using a hair sieve to separate the hull from the bean. Beneath the metate in which the chocolate is to be ground, place a flat pan containing a hot fire. Once the stone is warm, begin grinding the chocolate. Mix the chocolate with the sugar, pounding it with a mallet and grinding the two together. Then divide the mixture into chunks. The chunks are shaped by hand into tablets, square or round according to your preference, and set out to air. The dividing points can be marked with the tip of a knife if you wish. While Tita was forming the squares, she mourned for the 3 Kings days of her childhood when she didn't have such serious problems. Her biggest worry then was that the Magi never brought her what she asked for, but instead what Mama Elena thought best for her. It was some years before she learned the reason she had received the longed-for gift on one occasion. Nacha had saved up her wages for a long time to buy her the little movie she had seen in the display window of a store. It was called a little movie because it was an apparatus for projecting images on the wall using a petroleum lamp as a light source, producing an effect like a movie. But its real name was zoetrope. What joy she felt seeing it next to her stocking when she got up in the morning. How she and her sisters enjoyed the many afternoons spent watching the sequence of images drawn on strips of glass, which pictured different situations that were so entertaining. Those happy days when Nacha was with her seemed so distant now. Nacha. The smells. Her noodle soup. Her chilaquiles. Her champurrado. her molcajete sauce, her bread with cream, all were far away in a distant past. They could never be surpassed, her seasoning, her atole drinks, her teas, her laugh, her herbal remedies, the way she braided her hair and tucked Tita in at night, took care of her when she was sick, and cooked what she craved and whipped the chocolate. If she could bring back a single moment from that time, a little of the happiness from those days, she could prepare the King's Day bread with the same enthusiasm she had felt then. If only she could eat the bread afterward with her sisters, laughing and joking, just like old times, when she and Rosaura had not had to compete for the love of a man, before she knew that she would not be allowed to wed, that Gertrudis would run away from home and work in a brothel, and when she still believed that if she found the doll in the bread, all her wishes would miraculously come true, literally everything she had wished for. Life had taught her that it was not that easy. There are few prepared to fulfill their desires whatever the cost, and the right to determine the course of one's own life would take more effort than she had imagined. That battle she had to fight alone, and it weighed on her. If she could only have her sister Gertrudis by her side. But it seemed more likely that a corpse would come back to life than that Gertrudis would come back home. No one had gone for news of her since Nicholas had taken her clothes to the brothel. Putting those memories to rest along with the squares of chocolate she had just finished, Tita began the Three Kings Day bread at last. Ingredients: 30 grams fresh yeast, 1 1/4 kilos flour, 8 eggs, 1 tablespoon salt, 2 tablespoons orange blossom water, 1 1/2 cups milk, 300 grams sugar, 300 grams butter, 250 grams candied fruit, 1 porcelain doll. Preparation. Break up the yeast in 1/4 kilo of flour using your hands or a fork and adding 1/2 cup of warm milk, a little at a time. When the ingredients are well blended, knead briefly, form into a ball, and let rest until the dough grows to double its size. Just as Tita was putting the dough to rest, Rosaura made her appearance in the kitchen. She came to ask Tita's help in carrying out the diet John had prescribed for her. For some weeks now she had been having serious digestive problems. She suffered from flatulence and bad breath. Rosaura felt so distressed by these upheavals that she had determined that she and Pedro should sleep in separate bedrooms. That reduced her suffering slightly. She could pass gas as she pleased. John had recommended that she abstain from such foods as root and leafy vegetables, and that she perform some active physical labor. This last was made difficult by her excessive bulk. There was no explaining the way she had gotten so fat after her return to the ranch, since she was still eating the same as always. It took an enormous effort for her to set her voluminous, gelatinous body in motion. All these ills carried with them an infinity of problems, the worst being that every day Pedro moved farther and farther away from her. She couldn't blame him. Even she couldn't stand the foul smell. She couldn't take any more. It was the first time Rosaura had plucked up her courage and discussed these topics with Tita. She confessed she had not approached her before because of the jealousy she felt. She had thought that there was an amorous relationship between Tita and Pedro, concealed, hidden by outward appearances. Now that she saw how much John loved her and how soon she would be married to him, she had realized the absurdity of continuing to harbor this type of suspicion. She was sure there was still time to establish good relations between them. To tell the truth, until now the Rosaura-Tita relationship had been like water in boiling oil. With tears in her eyes, she begged Tita not to harbor bad feelings about her marriage to Pedro. She asked Tita's advice how to save it. As if Tita was the one to dispense that kind of advice. With difficulty, Rosaura reported that it had been several months since Pedro had approached her with amorous intentions. He practically avoided her. That alone didn't worry her too much. Pedro had never been disposed to sexual excess. It wasn't just that. It was his attitude. In it, she detected his frank rejection of her. And she could put her finger on just when it started, since she remembered perfectly. It was the night the ghost of Mama Elena first appeared. She was awake, waiting for Pedro to return from his walk. When he returned, he paid almost no attention to her story of the ghost, as if he was hardly there. During the night, she had tried to embrace him, but he was either asleep or pretending to be, and he didn't respond to her advances. Later, she had heard him weeping quietly. Then she had pretended not to hear. She felt sure that her fatness, her flatulence, and her foul breath were driving Pedro farther away every day, and she couldn't see a solution. So now she was asking Tita's help. She needed help as never before. She had no one else to turn to. Every day the situation grew more serious. She didn't know how she would react to what they would say if Pedro left her. She couldn't stand it. Her only consolation was that at least she had her daughter Esperanza, who was obliged to stay with her forever. Until that point, all was going well, since what Rosaura said had produced pangs in Tita's conscience. But when she heard for the second time what Esperanza's fate was to be, she had to make a supreme effort not to shout at her sister that it was the sickest idea she had heard in her life. She couldn't begin a discussion between them right now that would spoil the good impulse she felt to forgive Rosaura for how she had harmed her. Instead of voicing her thoughts, Tita promised her sister that she would prepare a special diet to help her lose weight. She kindly supplied her with a family remedy against bad breath. Bad breath originates in the stomach, and several causes contribute to it. To eliminate it, start by gargling salt water mixed with a few drops of powdered camphor vinegar, sniffing the mixture up into the nostrils at the same time. In addition, chew mint leaves constantly. By itself, the regimen proposed here, when followed rigorously, can purify the foulest breath. Rosaura was infinitely grateful for her sister's help and quickly went out to the garden to pick some mint leaves, asking for Tita's absolute discretion in this delicate matter. But Tita was distraught. What had she done? How could she make up for the harm she'd done to Rosaura, to Pedro, to herself, to John? How could she face him when she saw him in a few days, when he returned from his trip? John, the person to whom she owed nothing but thanks. John, who had brought her back to her senses. John, who had shown her the way to freedom. John, his peace, serenity, reason. Truly, he did not deserve this. What could she tell him? What could she do? For the moment, the best thing she could do was to continue preparing the King's Day bread, since the leavened dough she had left to rest while she talked with Rosaura was now ready for the next step. Use 1 kilo of flour to form a well on the table. Place all the ingredients in the center of this well and begin kneading, starting in the center and gradually adding a little of the flour from the well until all the flour has been incorporated. When the leavened dough has risen to twice its size, combine it with this other dough, blending them perfectly until the dough comes off your hands easily. Use a scraper to remove any dough that has stuck to the table so that it can be blended in as well. Place the dough in a deep container that has been greased. Cover with a napkin and wait for it to rise until it has doubled in size yet again. Take into account the fact that it takes approximately 2 hours for the dough to double in size and that it has to rise 3 times before it is put into the oven. As Tita was putting the napkin over the container where she had set the dough to rest, a strong gust of wind banged the kitchen door wide open, causing an icy blast to invade the room. The napkin flew into the air and an icy shiver ran down Tita's spine. She turned around and was stunned to find herself face to face with Mama Elena, who was giving her a fierce look. "I told you many times not to go near Pedro. Why did you do it?"
"I tried, Mommy, but..."
"But nothing. What you have done has no name. You have forgotten all morality, respect, and good behavior. You are worthless, a good-for-nothing who doesn't respect even yourself. You have blackened the name of my entire family from my ancestors down to this cursed baby you carry in your belly."
"No, my baby isn't cursed."
"Yes, it is. I curse it. It and you forever."
"No, please."
Chencha's entrance into the kitchen caused Mama Elena to spin on her heels and go out the same door by which she had entered.
"Close the door, child. Can't you feel how cold it is? Lately you've seemed so up in the air. What is bothering you?"
"Nothing. Except she had missed a period and thought she was pregnant, and she had to tell John when he came back to marry her to cancel the wedding, and she had to leave the ranch if she wanted to have her baby without problems, and she had to give up Pedro forever since she couldn't go on hurting Rosaura. That was all. But she couldn't say that to Chencha. She was such a gossip that if Tita told her, the next day the whole village would know. She preferred to give her no answer and change the subject without more ado, much as Chencha did to her when she was caught out on some weak point.
"How awful! The dough is already rising over the pan. Let me finish the bread, or tomorrow night will catch us and we still won't be done."
The dough wasn't yet over the top of the pan where she'd put it to rest, but it was an ideal pretext to divert Chencha's attention onto another topic. When the dough has doubled in size for the second time, remove it from the container, place it on the table, and form it into a strip. If you wish, you may place some bits of candied fruit in the middle. If not, just the porcelain doll placed at random. Roll up the strip, joining one edge to the other. Place the bread seam down on a greased and floured baking sheet. Form a ring with the dough, leaving enough space between the ring and the edge of the baking sheet, since the dough still has to double in size one more time. Meanwhile, light the oven to maintain a comfortable temperature in the kitchen until the bread finishes rising. Before placing the porcelain doll in the bread, Tita looked at it for a long time. Traditionally, on the night of the 6th of January, the bread is sliced, and the person who finds the doll hidden inside it is required to hold a celebration on the 2nd of February, Candlemas Day, when the baby Jesus is removed from the nativity scene. Ever since they were very young, this tradition had been converted into a sort of competition between her and her sisters. The one lucky enough to find the doll was considered lucky indeed. That night, with the doll clasped tightly in her two hands, she could make any wish she wanted. Carefully studying the delicate form of the doll, she was thinking how easy it was to wish for things as a child. Then nothing seemed impossible. Growing up, one realizes how many things one cannot wish for, the things that are forbidden, sinful, indecent. But what is decent? To deny everything that you really want? She wished she had never grown up, never known Pedro, never had to flee from him. She wished her mother would stop tormenting her, jumping out at her from every corner and crying contempt for her behavior. She wished Esperanza could marry without Rosaura being able to stop her, so she would never know this pain and suffering. She wished that the child would have the strength Gertrudis had shown and run away from home if necessary. She wished Gertrudis would come home to lend Tita the support she needed so much now. Making these wishes, she placed the doll in the bread and left the bread on the table so it could rise. When the bread has doubled in size the third time, decorate it with candied fruit,
Glaze it with a beaten egg and sprinkle it with sugar. Bake it in the oven for 20 minutes and let it cool. When the bread was ready to serve, Tita asked Pedro to help her carry it to the table. She could have asked anyone's help with it, but she needed to speak to him in private. "Pedro, I need to talk to you alone."
"That's easy. Why not go to the dark room? There we can do it without anyone bothering us. I've been waiting for you to come there for several days."
"Those visits to the dark room are just what I have to talk to you about." Chencha interrupted their conversation to inform them that the Loboses had just arrived at the party, and everyone was waiting for them to cut the bread. So Tita and Pedro had no choice but to postpone their conversation and carry the bread to the dining room, where it was anxiously awaited. As they crossed the hallway, Tita saw her mother, motionless beside the door to the dining room, throwing her a furious look. She was petrified. Pulque began to bark at Mama Elena, who was walking toward Tita threateningly. The fur on the dog's back was sticking straight up from fear, and he was backing away on the defensive. In his excitement, he put his back leg into the brass spittoon that stood at the end of the hall next to the fern, and when he tried to run away, he knocked it over, spraying its contents in every direction. The uproar he created drew the attention of the 12 guests, who were all sitting together in the living room. Alarmed, they looked out into the hall, and Pedro was forced to explain that Pulque did this type of inexplicable thing lately, perhaps because he was getting old, but that everything was under control. Nevertheless, Paquita Lobo could see that Tita was on the verge of fainting. She asked someone else to help Pedro carry the bread to the dining room, since she saw that Tita was not feeling well. She took her arm and led her to the living room. She made Tita sniff some smelling salts, and soon she had recovered completely. Then they decided to go to the dining room. Before leaving, Paquita detained Tita briefly and asked, "Are you feeling all right? I notice you still seem a little dizzy, and the look on your face? If I didn't know perfectly well that you are a decent girl, I would swear that you are pregnant." Tita, laughing and trying to appear casual, replied to her, "Pregnant? Only you would think of something like that. And what does the look on my face have to do with it?" "I can tell from a woman's eyes the minute she becomes pregnant." Tita was grateful to Pulque, who again rescued her from an awkward situation, since the incredible commotion that broke out on the patio kept her from having to continue this conversation with Paquita. Besides Pulque's barking, she could hear the sound of several horses galloping. All the guests were already in the house. Who could it be at this hour? Tita hurried to the door, opened it, and saw what Pulque was making such a fuss over, a person riding at the head of a band of revolutionary soldiers. When they got close enough, she could see that the person in charge of that troop was none other than her sister, Gertrudis. At her side rode the man who had carried her off years ago, Juan Alejandres, now a general. Gertrudis got down from her horse, and as if no time at all had passed, said confidently that since she knew it was the day they cut the three kings' bread, she had come for a good cup of freshly whipped hot chocolate. Tita, deeply moved, embraced her and led her straight to the table to grant her wish. In this house they made hot chocolate like nobody else's, since they took so much care with every step in making it, from its preparation to the whipping of the chocolate, yet another critical procedure. Inexpert beating can turn an excellent quality chocolate into a disgusting drink, either by under- or overcooking, making it too thick or even burnt. There's a very simple method for avoiding the aforementioned problems. Heat a square of chocolate in water. The amount of water used should be a little more than enough to fill the cups. When the water comes to a boil for the first time, remove it from the heat and dissolve the chocolate completely. beat with a chocolate mill until it is smoothly blended with the water. Return the pan to the stove. When it comes to a boil again and starts to boil over, remove it from the heat. Put it back on the heat and bring it to a boil a third time. Remove from the heat and beat the chocolate. Pour half into a little pitcher and beat the rest of it some more. Then serve it all, leaving the top covered with foam. Hot chocolate can also be made using milk instead of water, but in this case it should only be brought to a boil once, and the second time it's heated it should be beaten so it doesn't get too thick. However, hot chocolate made with water is more digestible than that made with milk. Gertrudis closed her eyes each time she took a sip from the cup of chocolate she had in front of her. Life would be much nicer if one could carry the smells and tastes of the maternal home wherever one pleased. Well, this was no longer her mother's house. Her mother had died without her knowing it. She felt real grief when Tita informed her of her mother's death. She had come back with the intention of showing Mama Elena how she had triumphed in life. She was a general in the Revolutionary Army. The commission had been earned by sheer hard work. She fought like mad on the field of battle. Leadership was in her blood, and once she joined the army, she began a rapid ascent through powerful positions until she arrived at the top. Moreover, she was coming back, happily married to Juan. They had met after not seeing each other for more than a year, and their passion had been reborn, just like the day they met. What more could a person ask? How she would have liked her mother to have seen it. How she would have liked to see her, even if only to be told with a look that she needed to wipe the traces of chocolate from her lips with her napkin. That was chocolate prepared like it used to be. Eyes closed, Gertrudis offered up a silent prayer, asking that Tita be granted many more years in which to prepare the family recipes. Neither she nor Rosaura knew how to make them. When Tita died, her family's past would die with her. When they had finished supper, they moved to the living room, and the dance began. The salon was ablaze with the light from a colossal number of candles. Juan impressed all the guests with the wonderful way he played the guitar, the harmonica, and the accordion. Gertrudis kept time to the songs Juan played, tapping the floor with the toe of her boot. She was watching him proudly from the far end of the salon, where a court of admirers had surrounded her, besieging her with questions about her part in the revolution. Smoking a cigarette, Gertrudis, perfectly at her ease, was regaling them with fantastic stories of the battles she'd been in. She had them open-mouthed as she told them about the first firing squad she had ordered, but she couldn't contain herself. She interrupted her story and flung herself into the center of the salon, where she began to dance gracefully to the polka Jesucita in Chihuahua, which Juan was playing brilliantly on the norteño accordion. She lightly hitched her skirt up to her knee, quite uninhibited. This attitude provoked scandalized comments among the ladies gathered there. Rosaura whispered in Tita's ear, "I don't know where Gertrudis gets her sense of rhythm. Mama didn't like to dance, and they say Papa was very bad at it." Tita shrugged her shoulders in answer, although she knew perfectly well who had given Gertrudis her rhythm and other qualities. That secret she planned to take to her grave, but it was not to be. A year later, Gertrudis gave birth to a mulatto baby. Juan was furious and threatened to leave her. He couldn't forgive Gertrudis for having returned to her old ways. Then Tita, to save their marriage, told them everything. It was fortunate she had not dared to burn the letters, since now her mother's black past served to establish proof of Gertrudis's innocence. It was a hard blow for him to take, but at least they didn't separate. Instead, they lived together forever, and were happy more often than not. Tita knew the reason for Gertrudis's sense of rhythm,
just as she knew the reason for the failure of Rosaura's marriage and for her own pregnancy. Now what she wanted to know was the solution. That was what mattered. At least now she had someone in whom to confide her problems. She hoped that Gertrudis would stay on the ranch long enough to hear her story and give her some advice. Chencha, on the other hand, wished just the opposite. She was furious at Gertrudis, not exactly at her, but at the work involved in waiting on her troop. Instead of enjoying the party, at this hour of the night, she had had to set up a huge table on the patio and prepare chocolate for the 50 men in the troop.
To be continued. Next month's recipe. Cream fritters.